Thanks for tuning in. Host Noah Weil is a licensed attorney admitted to practice in Washington State and the Federal Court of the Western District of Washington. Some guests on this program may be licensed attorneys as well. However, the discussion on this podcast is intended to be informative only and is not a substitute for legal advice for your particular situation. The information may be right or may be wrong. Changing laws and the laws of individual states mean the information presented here may not be accurate. But regardless, and this part is important, neither Noah nor any guest here is your lawyer. If you need a lawyer for your individual situation, you should consult and retain your own attorney.
Welcome back to the Better Know a Lawyer podcast. I'm your host, Noah Weil, and today we're talking about sentencing. What is sentencing? Sentencing is when the judge in a case punishes your client. This can come from the end of a trial, or it can come after a guilty plea. Whatever the outcome, if there is a guilty finding of some sort, the judge determines a punishment. It's a very, very important part of my work. I've been told I'm pretty good at it. I'd rather be known for winning all the time, but if I'm going to lose or I'm going to take a deal, being capable at sentencing is very beneficial to my clients. I think that a lot of people misunderstand or don't appreciate the total role a defense attorney has in a case. Certainly, if a defense attorney can allow their client to escape punishment or get away with it, or if they're innocent, make sure that they are vindicated and not held accountable for something they didn't do, that's great. And a big part of my job is to do those things, to look for defenses, look for another culprit, that kind of thing. But as I've said before to people at cocktail parties and so on, if a client did commit the crime, and the police did everything right, and the prosecutors do everything right, the client's probably going to face some punishment for their actions. But what I can do is help minimize that punishment. If they're going to be convicted of a crime, and that's nothing light, then at least I can make sure they don't spend too much time in jail, or don't have their bank accounts drained in fees and fines, or something like that. Allow them to do what they need to do, and then move on with their life. The important thing to know about sentencing is that judges have a lot of discretion. They can't go beyond the statutory maximum, whatever the crime is, it varies. A gross misdemeanor, like a DUI, has a maximum penalty of a year in jail and a $5,000 fine, and felonies have various maximums. But within those ranges, a judge has almost unfettered discretion. A judge can take a DUI and say you have one day in jail, or they can say you have 30 days in jail. You can imagine for yourself the difference in your life between spending overnight somewhere and spending a month somewhere. It has serious consequences for people's jobs, for their families, for their life. And so part of my job is to tell the judge why they should exercise their discretion in a certain way. Now, to me, the number one step for effective sentencing is being able to tell your client's story. And to do that, you have to make a connection with them. Now, I'm lucky in that I genuinely like my clients. They've often been accused of bad things, sometimes really bad things, but for some reason, in that role, I still like them. I think it's because I like most people in general, and I get to know somebody pretty well when I'm representing them. Being able to like your clients is the first step to wanting the best for them. If you loathe your clients, if you want them to suffer, maybe sentencing isn't the best fit for you. Maybe give it to somebody else or do your best to get over that. But I do feel like the judges know I get along with my clients and I want the best for them. And that comes across in my sentencing. The criminal justice system in general is really slanted against defendants. Really, really, really. The prosecutors have all the resources. You know, they have the police department on their side. They have lots of support staff. People tend to believe police more than defendants. Prosecutors are respected. Defense attorneys are reviled, etc. But the one area where I think defense attorneys and defendants have a real advantage is at sentencing. The prosecutors, their story about my clients is really brief and it's not very interesting. On so-and-so day, this person did a bad thing. The end. I have the luxury and the advantage and the privilege of being able to find out everything about my client. I can find out where they were born, what education they have, what jobs they've done, their family, all the things to paint a complete picture about who a person is. I never believe someone's biggest mistake represents the entirety of their life. That's not true for anybody. That's not the society that I want to be a part of. When I'm getting prepared for a sentencing, I talk to my clients about their goals, their past mistakes, what they're doing right now, all kinds of things. I need to make sure the judge knows that the person I am representing is a person and not just a case number or a DUI or something like that that tends to dehumanize them. Judges care about certain things, and what they care about varies somewhat between judges and between cases. But it's important for a defense attorney to know or figure out what a judge is going to care about on an individual case and then address that. So, for example, in a DUI, in a first-time DUI, an explanation of why this happened when it hadn't happened before is something a judge cares about. For example, I had a case where a person was in a somewhat tense situation with a date. The date had gone wrong and things were getting kind of ugly, and so she wanted to get away from him. And so she drove, and she drove drunk and was picked up, etc. We reached a good deal, but I felt important that the judge know that this wasn't some instance where a person thought they could get away with it or that they were feeling reckless, but it was a conscious choice they made for their own safety. And the judge appreciated that and gave about the lightest sentence he could give in the situation. It was already below DUI, and then he basically said, "You're done." So why did this happen? If it's happened before, why is this case different? Why won't this person do it again? If it's someone's third DUI, what's going on in their life? What treatment has the person done since then? Something went amiss, but addressing the judge's concerns that this person is not a habitual drunk driver is really important to give them the chance to show they're not a habitual drunk driver. A judge can lock somebody up for a year on a third DUI. Asking them not to, you have to give them a reason for them not to do that. I had a case where someone was on a deferred prosecution for a DUI, which is basically a DUI will be dismissed after a long time if they're in compliance with treatment, if they abstain from drinking, etc. It's a very intense process. And the person didn't commit a new DUI, but he was found drinking. And I needed to know why. He was actually pretty close to the end of the program, and to lapse at that point was strange. And so we figured it out that basically he had two deaths in his family right after each other, and his marriage was also starting to come apart. And all these things collectively led to him resorting to drinking. And I found that out. I got some letters about how in compliance he had been before this point, how positive he was about continuing with his treatments, and I presented that all to the judge. At this point, the judge could have revoked his deferred prosecution, which meant found him guilty on the spot of DUI and sent him to jail for a long time, or she could have kept him in the program and said, maybe a sanctioned, but you are still not convicted of this DUI. And she chose the latter. She decided this was an aberration for some very stressful life circumstances, and that she hoped it wouldn't happen again. And to my knowledge, it didn't. She gave him a chance and it paid off. It's important that you, as an attorney, put yourself out there. There's no way your client can advocate as well for themselves as you can for them. You are literally a professional advocate. At sentencing, a client has the opportunity to speak. They're entitled, it's called elocution, and they can say whatever they want to the judge. A lot of people are uncomfortable speaking in public and don't want to say anything at all, and that's totally fine. I have very rarely seen someone, a client, speaking directly to the court to making a difference. It's happened if they're really eloquent or they're really emotional, but a lot of the times someone doesn't speak, and that's fine. It's not used against them. Judges understand. I tell my clients that if they do want to speak, keep it brief. Apologize. Don't try to make excuses. The worst thing in the world to do at a sentencing is to explain why it wasn't really a big deal. The person did the act. If they were found guilty or they pleaded guilty, accept that it happened. Trying to minimize the events after the fact is terrible. That just says to the judge, I don't take this very seriously. I'm probably going to do it again. Accept the responsibility. Accept that it happened. Talk about moving forward. A lot of my sentencing work is very future-oriented. What's going to happen now? What's next in their life? I tell my clients, accept the responsibility. Apologize. If you want to say something about what you're planning on doing, go for it. I tell them not to threaten to kill the judge. Don't threaten to burn down the courthouse. Those things don't work out well at sentencing. And they've listened, and I appreciate that. But as a lawyer, you need to really put yourself out there. You need to be sensitive to what the judge cares about and argue, sometimes strenuously, for why you think a result is the best result. I had a case just last week, and this is actually what inspired me to write or record this podcast, where the judge was sick of seeing my clients. She had been there many, many times before. It was some low-level theft charges, and it just been over and over and over again. And the judge said, on the record, why shouldn't I give her the maximum? Why shouldn't I throw her in jail for a year? What's the difference? And the judge and I had a long talk about it. We went back and forth quite a bit. I had talked about what my clients had done to this point. I talked about the months knowing her. I made a point that my client and I were roughly the same age and about the advantages I've had in my life to not have the history and the record and the disadvantage that my client did, and that I didn't believe she was a lost cause and that I had secured some treatment facilities for her, ready to take her in because, of course, alcohol and drugs were a part of her choices. And after a pretty lengthy discussion, longer than they usually go, the judge agreed, let her go to get started with treatment. I don't know if she's going to stick with everything. I hope she does. She has a lot of hurdles to overcome, but at least she has the opportunity to. And that's the best I can do, is carve out that opportunity for my clients to go through them. The worst times at sentencing are when the victims show up. They don't always. Sometimes there's no victim at all with a DUI. There's no one to come. But sometimes the crime's happening against other people, and then the victims show up, and that gets a little dicey. By our Constitution, the victims can address the court, talk about the implications and the effects of a crime against them. The rule is supposed to tell the judge this, but they always tell my client directly, here's what you did, which is not proper, but no one ever says anything because, what are you going to do? So I'll have a person out there, and especially in felony sentencing, where my client is about to lose their voting rights for a while, versus a victim who is a voter and is asking this judge for something directly and can legally do that, usually my guys get pretty hammered. I'll tell the story. I'll talk about what they've done. But specifically when victims are in court, I find it's very, very hard for judges to not put a little extra heat in the book they throw at my clients. And I'm still working on ways to overcome that, but it is tough. You just have to stand there and say, yeah, all that stuff happened, and that is how you feel. But those are somewhat rare. Usually the victims are happy to get restitution, to have the case be done with, not have to come testify in court, or things of that nature, if there's a plea. The last thing I want to say about sentencing is that it's an opportunity for a lawyer to be kind of a creative person. You can be creative in your arguments, but you can also be creative in what you can ask the court to do. There's the maximums, as I've said, but past that, the judge has a lot of discretion on things they can sentence. For example, you can ask for community service. You can ask for work release, which is during the day they're released and at night they come back to jail so they can work or go to school during the day, which is a lot better than 24 hours in custody. The rule is the court can't order treatment unless there's some nexus to treatment to the crime. So, for example, if someone shoplifts a candy bar, the court can't order them to go to alcohol treatment or drug treatment because there's really no connection unless the person was so obviously drunk when they shoplifted, which, you know, happens. But you can allow the court, you can tell the court, we'll agree to extend the court's authority to make him go to treatment. But in exchange, we're asking the court to not sentence him to jail for a month. And courts will often do that. They would rather see somebody in treatment than just in jail. That's just not effective for reducing recidivism. Not really, not compared to treatment. And so there are opportunities for a lawyer to do better by their client. The important thing is to know what the client wants. Sometimes clients just want no probation, no treatment. They want to do their time in jail and then just be done with this forever. And some clients said, I will do anything but go to jail. And it's all legitimate. It's just what an individual client wants. So it comes back to talking with your client, finding out what they care about, their life, having that connection, and then presenting all that information to the court. You don't always get what you want, but having the complete picture helps immeasurably, and it's part of my job, and I like that part very much. I'm going to wrap up with a quick sentencing story. It's one of my favorite stories as a lawyer. Pretty early on in my career, I had a case. It was a misdemeanor case. It wasn't the crime of the century, but it was somewhat serious. It was violating a protection order. Somebody who wasn't supposed to be around somebody was around that person. Now that other person had invited them to be there, which is not a defense, but they had a kind of a messed up history. So police had come to a scene, saw them both together. It was a very open and shut case. There was really no effective defenses. And my client was on probation, so getting a new conviction would have given him additional jail time, potentially. And the prosecutor said, I want 14 months for your client if he pleads guilty. And I said, no, there's no way I'm going to have him plead to above the misdemeanor maximum on a charge. And he said, if you don't, you'll go to trial and you'll lose. And I said, probably, but I still think a judge, given these circumstances, is not going to give him 14 months on this charge. And he kept saying, you can't win at trial. And I kept saying, I know, but I can still do better at trial than with you. He and I did not get along. It was a pretty aggressive back and forth. So we went to trial, and it was pretty nasty the whole way through. We were doing everything we could to win. He was doing everything we could to win within the bounds of ethics, but it was a more tense trial than most of them, I would say, because there was just no love lost between us. And we get through trial, and it had to have been the quickest deliberations in that courtroom, at least top five. The jury was in and out very quickly, and they came back guilty on my client, of course. Probably a side topic, but it's kind of liberating to have a case where it's really, 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 really hard to win, because you can try stuff out, and if they don't work out, you're in the same position. I tried some stuff out. It super didn't work. But nonetheless, we went in front of the judge for sentencing, and the prosecutor asks for my client to be maxed out completely, which was roughly 3 years. every probation case, every this charge, give him the absolute maximum. There was no reason that 14 months became 3 years, except, again, this prosecutor didn't like me, didn't like my client, and he had this opportunity. Well, I went in front of the judge, and I talked about the situation. I talked about my clients. We had been through this trial together, so we were getting along pretty well. And I asked for less time, basically. And the judge agreed with me and gave him 10 months total, which was certainly not nothing. 10 months in jail is no joke, but it wasn't 14 months and it wasn't 3 years. And my client was laughing and shaking my hand and agreeing that this was the best possible outcome. And the prosecutor was pissed. But you can't control everything. You can make your offer, but at sentencing, it's always the judge's call to make. And luckily this judge agreed. This client deserved less than 3 years. So that's it for this episode. If you have any questions about sentencing or anything else, feel free to send me an email. My email address is Noah, N-O-A-H, at betternoahlawyer.com. BetterNoahLawyer.com. If you have any feedback about this episode or future episodes or any topics you want me to cover, I'd certainly like to hear about that. Until then, this is Noah Weil. Thanks for listening.